It's time for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Hellenberger. Marshall's the editor and publisher of The Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Hi, Marshall. Thanks for being with us.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Couple of school stories I know you've been covering in the paper. Let's start with school enrollment projections in St. Louis County. What'd you find out?
Yeah, the St. Louis County School District recently got a look at a 10-year demographic study that was prepared for the district by John Powers of Applied Insights North. They do quite a bit of work, demographic work around the region. It was interesting to see the results. It kind of raises some red flags for the district, especially in the north half of the district. For the south half, it was mostly good news. Over the next 10 years, they project that enrollment will stay roughly stable or increase slightly, which is something that most school districts like to see, since enrollment directly determines the amount of state funding you receive. So more students, or at least the same number of students, certainly helps. On the other hand, the schools in the north, particularly the two K-12 schools in the north half of the district, would be the Northwood School near Cook and the Northeast Range School in Babbitt. Both of those are projected to see fairly substantial enrollment declines over the next 10 years. Actually, really over the next 8 years, because they were looking at the 2026 school year, 2026-27. We're talking about really in about 8 years that they would be seeing these changes. And the Northwood School was looking at dropping from their current enrollment of about 538 students down to 438, whereas Northeast Range, which has been a school of concern for a while with their enrollment, is currently 260, and that's K-12. They project that'll drop to 187 by 2026. So that's a fairly substantial drop that is certainly going to be a number that the district officials, I think, are going to be looking at with some concern. And we're already really seeing some of the impacts of that, especially with Northeast Range. They have really struggled, for example, in sports. You know, their sports teams have been very small number of students, which makes it hard in both football and basketball this year. They've had to actually forfeit a few games. You get a couple kids out sick, and suddenly you don't have enough to field the team. That's a problem. They've also struggled, whether it's on the football field or on the basketball court. It's been pretty tough for the teams. They don't have a lot of older kids. You know, they're mostly playing eighth graders, ninth graders, and so they're kind of getting their clocks cleaned a lot. You know, it just makes it harder to attract kids to want to play on teams like that. So that really does create a problem, because for a lot of students and a lot of families, you know, sports is a big part of the school experience, and a lot of folks would prefer to be on winning teams. You do get some movement from parents and students to schools that are doing better in that regard. I think we've seen that in Northwoods. You know, they've had some very good teams. Their basketball team, of course, is top-ranked, and they've been seeing some in-migration, at least more so than Northeast Range, I think specifically for the sports. So that does make a difference. And just looking at it down the road here, you know, obviously if you're looking at district-wide, a loss of about 200 students, you know, that does have an impact. You know, it'd be about $2 million in lost revenue. Now, for a district the size of 2142, that's probably a manageable number, particularly as it would take place over, you know, the next 8 years or so. But it's certainly something that they're going to be paying a lot of attention to, and they're going to have to make some decisions, you know, at what point a school is viable. So nobody's talking about any school closures at this point, but, you know, it's going to start to be on the radar if these numbers actually do pan out.
Any good news out of this demographic study?
Well, like I said, you know, we're looking at possible growth in enrollment in both Cherry and Southridge, and they're in the southern half of the school district. And it's funny, too, I don't know if people are aware, but this is the only school district in the state that actually has two separate parts. You know, you have the north half, which is north of the Mesabi Range all the way up to the Canadian border, and then you have the south half, which is located south of the Mesabi Range, Cherry and Albrook and Cotton, places like that, goes almost all the way down to Duluth. So it's a very sprawling and disparate kind of district. But at least in the south half, it appears that they seem to be getting some in-migration through open enrollment. of students, particularly from the Hibbing area. I know the Cherry School has been seeing a lot of students coming in from Hibbing. So we're not really sure why, but it's been a trend that's continued for the last several years. And so they're certainly looking at another expansion at the Cherry School because of that in migration. So, you know, the school enrollment issue is really interesting to watch, and you just never know how it's going to shake out over the years.
Let's move on to another story you've been covering having to do with schools, this time Ely and the school board. They met recently and had some pretty interesting talks.
They did. You know, they decided they needed to talk a little bit about an issue that I'm sure a lot of school boards are grappling with right now, and that is guns in schools and gun safety, school safety. And at this point, they said there are no plans to push for pistol-packing principles on the Ely School campus. There was very little, if any, support for the idea of arming teachers, and the school board really emphasized that they would rather focus on building positive relationships between students and teachers, you know, as opposed to the idea of bringing guns into the school. And I suspect a lot of schools will be, you know, up this way, will probably be taking a similar position, and I'm sure a lot of them will be talking about this, you know, over the next few months and probably years, because I suspect this problem isn't going to go away.
Well, Marshall, let's move on to another story we often talk about on the Border News Roundup, copper nickel mining and the politics, the business of it. A new poll came out that had some surprising findings.
Yeah, it really did. You know, and a lot of times polls that are put out by an organization on one side or another, you know, can be kind of dismissed, biased. But the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters, which is based in Ely, and they're primarily focused on opposing the proposed Twin Metals copper-nickel mine, which would be located just south of Ely along the Kuishui River. They commissioned a poll by Fabrizio Ward, which is a polling firm. It's a Republican-leaning firm that's done a lot of work for Republicans, including Donald Trump and Tim Pawlenty. And they did that intentionally because they didn't want to have it, you know, being dismissed as some environmental group that was doing the polling. You know, this is a firm that, if anything, would probably lean the other way. And they'd actually had hired them last year, and they asked a series of questions and then got results. And then now, a year later, they went back and did the same survey questions, you know, in the same group, or the same random sample anyway, to kind of get a sense of how attitudes might be changing regarding copper-nickel mining, particularly the Twin Metals project near Ely. And what was very interesting was the survey results showed that opposition to the sulfide-based copper-nickel mining has increased a lot. In fact, last year when they asked the question, there was 59% opposition statewide, and when they asked the same question this year, it was up to 70%. And I thought what was most interesting was the number of people who were strongly opposed. Last year it was 39%. Today it's 52% of Minnesotans that they polled said they are now strongly opposed to copper nickel mining near the Boundary Waters. And what's interesting, too, is that opinion holds within the 8th Congressional District, you know, basically northeastern Minnesota, which has generally been, you know, more friendly towards copper nickel mining. But even within the 8th Congressional District, opposition now is at 56%, whereas only 39% favor the mining. And what's interesting, too, is that the partisan breakdown on this is really dramatic. On the DFL side, even in the 8th Congressional District, 77% of DFLers said they oppose this mining project near the Boundary Waters, with 61% expressing strong opposition. And that's in the 8th Congressional District. Statewide, 91% of DFLers said they were opposed. And that, you know, that's really astonishing. And among independents, you had 69% who were opposed. And even among Republicans, there was a 45% plurality who said they opposed it. But I thought, you know, this breakdown among DFLers is interesting because it really shows how I think that issue is likely to play into both, you know, the gubernatorial race as well as the 8th Congressional District race. It really raises the question about how somebody you know, can run and win the DFL nomination, who's taking a pro, you know, a strongly pro copper nickel mining position, particularly on that Twin Metals project. You know, and I suspect this is where Congressman Nolan ran into some trouble, because this is when he started to really get some heat from a lot of DFLers I know in our region, when he took some of those very strong positions to try to advance that copper nickel project there by Ely. And he got a lot of grief, and he also ended up with the primary challenger in Leah Pfeiffer. And she did very well in the caucuses, and I think that this issue played a big role in that, and probably is what, in the end, was one of the factors anyway that probably forced him out of that race. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not other candidates come out who take a strong pro copper nickel mining position. I would expect that we would see that from Jason Metza from Virginia, the state representative who just announced that he's throwing his hat in the ring on the DFL side for the 8th District seat. This is going to be a very interesting race to watch to see how this issue in particular starts to play out. But the other thing, too, was people indicated that they strongly supported, in fact, two-thirds of Minnesotans expressed support for Governor Dayton's ban on development on any state lands of that Twin Metals copper-nickel project there near Ely. And then the other thing was that there's considerable support as well, or a number of people who said that, a majority, in fact, said that that would be an issue that would affect how they vote for governor. You know, they would want to see a gubernatorial candidate who would continue that ban. I was surprised at the degree to which the opposition had really increased. The other thing I would note here, too, is I think what this shows, though, is that people are recognizing, I think the more they hear about it, that there's a difference between the sulfide-based mining and taconite mining. And I think as that message has gotten out there, you're seeing support for, you know, the copper-nickel mining is dropping. All the polls that have been done on support for taconite show very broad support across the political spectrum in Minnesota for taconite mining. So I think people are, you know, understanding that there's a difference between the two types of mining, and it's not just, you know, all mining, that there is a difference. And that's something that I know some of the copper nickel mining supporters have tried to kind of gloss over, the fact that there's a distinction. You know, I've heard a lot in various public settings that if you're not in favor of copper nickel mining, you're opposed to all mining. And I think this poll shows that most people are not agreeing with that position.
As far as I know, and they're wide open fields still, the District 8 as well as the governor, but so Michelle Lee is opposed to copper nickel mining. Is she the only DFLer running in District 8 now that has said that?
Well, she's the only one who has taken a very firm, clear position on the copper nickel issue.
Okay.
Leah Pfeiffer has also certainly indicated that she's got real concerns about it. She's taken the position, though, that the process should be allowed to play out.
Okay.
She really faulted Nolan for kind of trying to short-circuit the process that's been going on that Twin Metals project.
Okay. And in the governor's race, just Rebecca Otto?
Rebecca Otto is the only one that I know has taken a real clear position in opposition. And it's interesting to note, she came in by far first. She did very well in the 8th Congressional District.
Yeah.
And she, I know up in this area, the 3rd Senate District, which is, you know, Coochichin County, Northern St. Louis, Lake, and Cook County, she got more support than all of the other DFL candidates combined. That tells you something about where the DFL base is right now on this issue.
Well, like I said, it's really wide open still, but it'll be interesting. We still have a long way to go till November. It'll be interesting to continue to see how copper nickel mining affects the races, that are political races going on. So
that's for sure. I'm sure we'll be talking about it again.
Marshall Helmberger, the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. Marshall, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Heidi.